the one gun at it,
What I'm really wanting, a brand new machine. Every time I look at you, I go blind.
Every time I look at you, I go blind.
One day in your life shouldn't be a problem.
One of Canada's most iconic bands for the last four decades, nominated for 8 Juno Awards and among the top 50 best-selling Canadian bands in Canada. 5440 has been very successful with their career, with four of their albums being certified platinum in Canada. Neil Osborne and Brad Merritt met in 1978 at South Delta High School in British Columbia, and they are still touring with a new album out and iconic hits. Joining me this morning is Brad Merritt, founding member of 5440.
So you and Neil, you've been heartbeat of 5440 since the very beginning. Did you ever imagine when you started this band, you'd be still writing, recording, and touring decades later?
Nope, absolutely not. I mean, as far as we could see, is opening up for one of our local punk rock heroes at the Commodore Ballroom and making $150, as far as we could see.
So you dream big. You just dreamed of getting to that next stage. You dreamed of just playing music.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at a certain point, you know, I mean, we kind of lived and died emotional letdown, you know, when you're 20 years old and you're trying to just play shows and write songs and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And so we decided early on that we're just going to play as much as we can, practice as much as we can, write as much as we can. And then we said, let's just make 10 records. We'll decide that right now, and no matter what happens. And I said that to Neil, and he goes, yeah, okay. And then we could see 10 records somehow. You know, we'd all have jobs and we would all have our little bands and we would make records and,
yeah,
you know, and travel in the van, and you know, and it's and what we've done is kind of a version of that. It just worked out bigger and better than we could have foreseen.
Yeah, for sure. I guess so. 40 years just cruising the Canadian music scene. What do you think identifies like a West Coast band?
Yeah, so that it's funny. You know, when we started, late 1980-81. Vancouver is very isolated. You know, it was a provincial little town, really. And, we had the border, which kind of cut us off from the U.S. a little bit. And then we had the mountains. You know, Toronto was distant, right?
Right.
And so, like I said, all of the punk rock community, they jumped in vans and they went down to, you know, the West Coast and back. And, so we said, well, that's what we're going to do. And we did the same thing. We played, San Francisco probably 20 times before we played Toronto, right?
Right, it's closer. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's closer. It's easier to get to, right? just got to get your father to smuggle your van load of equipment across the border.
That's easy peasy.
Yeah. So, I can't say what it is, but, there's always been kind of a West Coast sound, which probably pop music started in the late 50s or early 60s, distinct from, New York or Toronto or anything like that. And, I remember our music being described once as arena folk rock.
Oh, that's a good one.
And I went, yeah, I kind of get that. So, you think about, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young or, or whatever, or all the bands that migrated to Los Angeles, then even Joni Mitchell or whatever. There's kind of a West Coast vibe to that, right? And all the English bands acknowledge that, right? Going to California, the song on Led Zeppelin 4.
Right.
I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah. But, it's something though, isn't it? It's tangible.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's intangible, but it's there.
Yeah, it's there. If you could tour with any West Coast band, past or present, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one. we have done some dates with Chilliwack, right?
Okay.
So with Bill Henderson, and that's always great. I was just editing photos on my phone last night after the baseball game, and I had a bunch of those guys playing live. I didn't take any of that off. It was great because I think they're done. The Doors, maybe?
Oh, you guys in the Doors. You guys would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one.
So iconic songs. We're talking iconic songs like Ocean Pearl, I Go Blind. But you never lean too hard on nostalgia. How do you guys keep evolving creatively? What makes you go? What makes you tick these days?
Well, it's Neil, really. I mean, he's not that he comes up with everything all the time, but he does come up with, most of the stuff most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he usually places kind of parameters. He has a concept. Like, we have a new record that's about to come out, and there's three feature tracks on, you know, your various streaming platforms that people can access. And the concept for that one was, we're going to make a riff rock record, right? I mean, just like, you know, kind of garage band kind of a sensibility, you know? And it's just going to be the four of us plus Neil's brother, Dave, who plays keyboard. So mm-hmm. we had him set up with a little, you know, Continental box or a Farfisa or whatever. So it has that kind of a classic kind of sound.
Love that.
And we went to Portugal and spent 3 weeks in Porto and laid down all the basic tracks there with our producer, Warren Livesey. So, you know, that's something to look forward to. You know, it was nice working with Warren again, you know, who took a really good look at, you know, all the arrangements and parts. And we had 5 days of pre-production with him. So it's, you know, it's kind of like business as usual, mm-hmm. but every record is different, right? You know, some are going to be, you know, atmospheric and layered. Others are going to be stripped down. Some are going to have more classic sounds. Some are going to be more modern sounding or keyboard oriented or however you want to call it, right? But, you know, as soon as he has a vision, and not that it ever gets realized, because these things they tend to take on a life of their own.
Right.
But it's a direction, right? He has a direction. And then we all sort of just sort of fall into our various lanes and sort of move in that direction. And we do our own thing moving in that direction.
Okay. Yeah. Because this out, the West Coast out, that it sounds a bit darker, a little bit darker, right? Is that sort of part of the theme, I guess?
Yeah. The last record, West Coast Band, mm-hmm. it was made during COVID time.
Right. You guys were all, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, right. So, and we were, you know, on our weekly Zoom meeting, which was supposed to be kind of business and social, you know, we'd pour ourselves a beer and hang out for 40 minutes.
Right.
And then, you know, the business kind of dried up. And so it became more social. So we've never been very reflective, but we actually spent a lot of time telling stories.
Yeah.
And Neil was making notes.
A right? forced space. You guys were forced into a space, right? Pretty much.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So Neil starts writing these songs based on these stories of the band. And the record was never meant to be released, right? It was a way for us to entertain ourselves for a year and a half.
Really? And I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and he would send these files around, and then we'd put our parts on it, et cetera, send it to the next guy, blah, blah, blah. And finally, when we had the things written, then we all got together for 3 days in Vancouver and laid down the basic tracks. And then, you know, built it up from there with, you know, various overdubs. It was meant to amuse us. And then we went, you know, this is really good. It sounds really good. And these songs are really good. And there's probably going to be some people who are going to be interested in it. And it turns out we were right.
Yeah. And looking back on some of your key albums, for example, like Green Album, your self-titled second album, what stands out now in retrospect about who you were then and who you are now?
You know, Billy, I got to say, you ask a really difficult, thoughtful question.
I'm sorry.
This isn't your typical radio interview.
Well, should I say thank you?
Yeah. You know, I would say that as a point of pride, or take that as a point of pride.
Thank you.
With one more cup of coffee, I think I would be able to answer that in a very succinct way. But I would say it's a combination of things haven't changed at all, mm-hmm. and then things have changed, you know, quite a bit. You know, I love that record, you know, and it's so funny when the record came out, I thought, that's it. We're on our way.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. It's a great record.
It was kind of a rough story because, it's going to come out in June of 1986. Simultaneous release in the United States and Canada, and May of 1986 was the Payola scandal. So,
oh, wow. So, yeah. Payola. Yeah, so wish that was still around.
Yeah. There was no way for us to promote our record. So we had the best thing that had going for us was Baby Ran on MTV, which was helpful. But we couldn't couldn't get any radio play because there was no way for Warner Brothers to promote the record. But anyway, they said, oh, we'll worry about it on the next one. You know, it'll have in-house promotion set up. Anyway,
yeah,
the rest is kind of history. But the point is, you know, we were kind of on our way, but it didn't really give us the big jump that we were kind of hoping for. I mean, we never even released I Go Blind as a single in the United States. We only released it as a single in Canada. So it was kind of short-circuited by the record company. So that's just a little story for you.
Mm-hmm, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was buying time because I'm still thinking about your question. So as far as the actual changing is, we've evolved. We you know, we all have the ability to learn. We've all taken the time and made the commitment to become better players and singers. And also, you know, I think we've become way more crafty in the songwriting department too. From the early days, and we wanted to grow, you know, we learned it's like, you know, these are the chords you can put in the song if you want it to stay in the same key. Well, we didn't know that when we first started out, you know?
Yeah, so, right. You know, right.
You know, so, you know, you learn stuff, right? And then you also learn to, kind of play to your strengths a little bit, right? I used to call it, with the band, we economize with the chords, right? It's like, do we really need that?
Is that too much? Yeah, is that too much?
Yeah.
Have we gone too far?
And Neil wrote One Gun. I mean, it's Jim Cuddy calls it one chord. That's what he calls it.
Jim Cuddy's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got it down to one chord, right? So, but still, it's, you know, it's a beautiful melody, and mm-hmm. you know, it's got little changes in it, and the bass line evolves as it goes on, and you know, so you know, you learn how to become more musical if you want to, right? And so that's changed, but the sort of the energy commitment, also just our kind of core identity, I think, is exactly the same as it was on the Green record.
Okay, yeah. So you've been part of the Canadian rock scene through so many changes, as well as you brought up streaming and all of that stuff. Technology, distribution, streaming, live formats, podcasts. What surprised you the most, and what if you feel it has remained constant?
Jesus. Okay.
Like, so, social media has changed it a lot.
Technological changes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, we, you know, which has caused us, as I call it, existential moments, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. can we continue? Do we want to continue? You know, in the sort of 1999 to, you know, 2002 stage of the band, essentially, record companies ceased to exist, right? It's like we'd always had, we started as an independent album, or independent artist, I should say. And then, you know, we signed to Warner Brothers and then to Sony. And, you know, at that time, you know, we were watching all of our friends at various record companies being, you know, ushered out the door with their file boxes and their staplers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the whole thing imploded, right? You know, and the record companies have to take some responsibility for that, obviously. but it did change the landscape, and it allowed everybody to sort of get into the game if they wanted to. They could record, you know, with some, you know, digital gear in their basement or their bedroom, and and a lot of great records were made that way. So that's the kind of the technological thing and how it changed sort of the business, and you know, but we actually determined that we could stay in business. So we had this, you know, body of work that people loved. They all knew the songs, even if they didn't know the name of the band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they hear the song, oh, I know that song. I know. I like that song. I love that song. Who does that, right? So we had that going for us. And then we said, well, we'll just keep on keeping on, and you know, as long as we're making a living at it and having fun. So, you know, and I think that's the thing which hasn't changed, right?
Right.
The
love of it.
We care deeply about what we do. We've always made music for the right reasons, which is, you know, wasn't a lifestyle thing for us. It was basically, we thought that making music was its own reward. Just being able to do what it is that we do was good, was a positive thing. So, and we felt that that couldn't be taken away from us under the, you know, under this changing landscape, even though how you got paid might change.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And,
the streaming.
And we just worked through it. Right. But you're right. The stuff that we've seen, right? When we started, you know, I would go to my local record store in Vancouver and I would buy the 7-inch singles of my favorite local bands, right? Mm-hmm. And then they eventually would come out with an album and I'd buy that, you know. And then, you know, what it was, you know, cassettes. We actually did a cassette like in 1984 or 85 mm-hmm. up to the fire. And then it was CDs, and then it was, you know, mini discs and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah, the mini disc.
Streaming,
yeah.
You know, that just really changed. But, you know, the thing is, we're still here. We're still doing it.
Still loving it.
It's all kind of worked out, Billy.
I was talking to one of my friends who's a record label rep, who's one of the few left out there. But he was saying they don't even like go to see bands perform live anymore or anything like that. And if you don't have a TikTok following, you're pretty much not getting a record deal.
Yeah, that's what. So that's where we're at in this world. So it's kind of gone back to you got to do it by yourself. Yeah, all that like I find that whole TikTok. Well, we call it TikTok. Let's go with that. But it could be any whatever the platform people are on, you know. And they're on all of them anyway, right? You know, and that you whatever, and because you can dance a little bit and you can lip sync, and you've got 2 million followers, you're going to get a record deal, and people are going to write some songs for you, and you're going to go to Los Angeles or Nashville, and make a record.
It's like, wild.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We're in the rock and roll milieu. Genre, right? Mm-hmm. And rock and roll used to be, it was the cultural zeitgeist, in the 60s and 70s, right? Right? You know, I mean, it was the center of everything. I mean, there's always stuff around, and it's not, and hasn't been that way for a long, long time. There was a bit of a rock resurgence kind of in the 90s, early 2000s, but rock is dead, to quote The Who, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then long live rock, right? So it's kind of rising from the ashes. We find that our audience has gotten much younger over the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's because you have a lot of young people who are going to gravitate towards something which is authentic,
right?
You know, that mm-hmm. isn't manufactured, that's made for the right reasons. And that's bands like us.
Yeah, definitely.
And people are excited. They sing along. And it's like, wow.
I mean, I saw you guys in August at my friend's cottage, or July, I think. I brought my 16-year-old daughter, and she was just in love with you guys. I mean, because there's a real difference now with younger people. Like, some of the stuff TikTok has ruined it, but some stuff it's helped. Like Spotify, I find, and things like that. My daughter's taste in music is very eclectic, and it's very goes around for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah. Exactly. And that kid, I think there's a lot of kids who are open-minded about this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They're willing to, you know, and so, when I was just before we started our band, mm-hmm. you know, I had gotten to the point where there's really only two bands in the world. It's DOA and the Subhumans. You know, everything else sucks.
Right. You know? There's only two bands. Yeah. That you can like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only two bands, you know, and they're everything else sucks. And then, when you get rid of that, it's just so liberating, right? And it's like, next thing you know, it's like, hey, you know, like that Michael Jackson Off the Wall record, that's pretty good.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and it's funny because nothing's in, even working in radio, nothing's really put in categories of music anymore. It's not, you know, there's no alt rock and there's no, everything's sort of merged, right? Because of the eclectic tastes of everybody.
Yeah, this is it. So, you know, and I think that is a benefit for us. Yeah, and I think, you know, there is definitely a rock resurgence. I mean, we're part of a subculture, really. I mean, mm-hmm. it's, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm totally okay with that. Really comfortable, actually, I would say. So let's just get to it.
Yeah, and touring, you still loving the touring? You still like doing it? You still, you know, have that same spark?
Yeah. Yeah, so we're you know, we've got a show at the London Music Hall and at mm-hmm. the Danforth Music Hall in late November. But right now, tonight we start we start a tour with Foreigner.
No way!
Yeah, yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah, we're doing 12 shows with Foreigner in St. John's, Newfoundland, and then we're making our way. We're playing, what's the closest thing we're playing? Probably the closest one to you would be either Ottawa or Kingston.
Yeah, well, yeah, London or Toronto, yeah. Too. Yeah, so, but yeah, November. Yeah, but
Oh, well, yeah, for those shows, yeah, but for the Foreigner shows. But anyway, we're doing 12
shows. Oh, for the Foreigner shows. Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, yeah. How did that come to be, Foreigner and 5440?
So they got a Canadian promoter who's a Foreigner, and you know, he got it all lined up, and they say, you know, well, they need a rock band that, you know, can help the bill, you know, so they approached us, and we came to terms, and it's going to be fun.
Oh, that sounds amazing! But you still love touring, huh?
Yeah, I get to live my high school dream.
No kidding! Favorite Foreigner song?
Urgent.
Yeah, such a good song. Oh, that's going to be so fun. I love that for you, and I love that you woke up early enough. So that's easy for you.
My window.
Nice. Okay.
We play tonight here in St. John, then we all fly to Halifax, and then we pick up our tour bus, and then we go to Sydney, and then back to Halifax, then Moncton, and then we Montreal, Kingston, Ottawa, Sault Ste. Marie, and then we do three shows in Western Canada.
Love it. Always on the road. And you guys get along still on the road? Everything's good there?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. there's family squabbles from time to time, and people have different opinions, and stuff has to be worked out, you know?
Yeah, I bet.
But it comes together, right? And it's just, I love these guys. I say that sincerely. And they're like brothers, and they are brothers. So yeah, if we make it work.
I love it. 5440, Brad, you're great. Just on a personal note, I was just telling you about seeing you at my friend Suzanne's cottage in the summer. You brought us up on stage, and we had the t-shirts on, the pink ones.
Oh yeah, I love those.
Do you like when fans do stuff and make their own merch?
Oh yeah,
because I was like, they're going to be mad because we should probably bought their merch.
It's okay.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, we had such a great time, and again, I'm coming to see you in November at Danforth, which will be super fun.
Excellent.
Well, you're an amazing interview. Thank you so much for talking to me. I'm a longtime fan of yours, and I see you any chance I can.
Yeah, no, next time, Billy, I will have an extra cup of coffee. I'll be more prepared.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Brad. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay, Billy.
Have a good one.